Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to stand up here this afternoon and present to you this information regarding our research study at Oakland University between Oakland and the Bell Building. I'll give you a brief overview of the Bell Building. We're going to give you an overview of the photo research methodology and study design, preliminary results, benefits and challenges, the discussion program and policy recommendations, and an overview of our next steps. The Bell Building is a homeless recovery service program in Detroit, Michigan. We, as you heard in my introduction, serve the most chronically homeless in the city of Detroit. And when I say chronically homeless, what I'm meaning is we go out into community, go into abandonments, go under viaducts, reach out to anybody that's out there homeless at the time and build up a relationship with them, gain trust from them to bring them into the program. The housing program is under the Housing First concept, which means we house you first, and then we deal with your illnesses and things after we find a place you in an apartment. It's a 155-unit apartment complex for individuals, fully furnished when you move into the program, and the requirements to live in the program are, again, you have to be chronically homeless, you have to have some type of mental illness, and from there you can have co-occurring disabilities such as physical disabilities or your substance use illnesses. So everyone has a disability of a diagnosis. When you come into the program, you also have to pay 30% of your income. So when you move into the program, we help you to set up SSI, SSDI, or other monetary ways to make sure that you can stay into the program. If you don't have any income and you can't get any, we work with MSHA to waive your income to a zero fee. Oakland University and the Bell Building began a partnership for the CBPR partnership initiated in January 13, 2013. From that, we received partnership development funding from Detroit Urban Research Center and from Oakland University Small Research Study. In the beginning, we had some initial challenges, and we had some potential voter voice to perform the potential voter voice and enhance the participation of our participants, which were tenants in the Bell Building. We developed a qualitative research methodology which was used to, in what we hoped would, empower the focus of the participants that were in our program and also to make sure the participants were able to follow through with what we were asking them to do. One of the challenges, let me step back just a little bit, one of the challenges that we had with in the beginning in January 2013 was pulling all of the programs together, which were Oakland University staff and students, the tenants in the Bell Building, staff from the Bell Building, and trying to decide what type of research we actually wanted to do, what type of research would actually be meaningful, and what we could use to engage the participants to stay involved with the study. So that's when we kept meeting, and we had several of the tenants work with us. We threw out many different ideas, and we decided that the photo voice research methodology would be the best one to work with. And again, that is the qualitative research that would empower our tenants and help to keep them empowered and engaged, but help to move them in their lives from where they were, from being helpless and homeless, to having something productive in their lives and being able to move forward and do something positive in their lives. With this photo voice research, we provided the participants with cameras. We provided them with a basic photographic training, and we allowed the participants to take photos, and then we had a discussion method with the photos. With the discussions, we used the show technique, and with the show techniques, we asked five questions, or we were planning to ask five questions. The first one was, what do you see here? The second, what's really happening here? The third, what does this relate, or how does this relate to our lives? The fourth, why does this situation, concern, or strength exist? And the fifth, what can you do about it? So from there, we move forward with pulling together the students from Oakland University, professor from Oakland University, Rebecca, and our tenants. And what we did was to try to engage the tenants, what we had to do was, first of all, we needed to gain their trust so that they decided that they would want to work with the study group. So what we did was we took them on trips to Oakland University, and some of them have never been to college campuses before. We took them to the Detroit Institute of Art, showed them the art, and talked about engaging with art and what art is meaningful and what it means to you. We also came to the build. They also came to the building and did a nutrition class and a wellness class. So that was in order to help gain the trust of the tenants that were in the building. And remember, we have 155 mentally ill tenants in the building that we're trying to pull into the study group. Once we were able to engage some and get them to decide that, yeah, maybe we'll do this, the students came in from Oakland and they stayed in our common area, which is a hangout area for many of the tenants. And they talked to them about being part of the study. They had them sign up and do permission, sign that they were willing to participate in the program, and then we were able to engage the tenants. We tried to engage 20. However, we were only actually able to get 17 participants. We had 13 sessions between March and June, and the participants took photos of the theme, What Impacts Your Health and Wellness? So we allowed them to take the cameras, go out, and take pictures that impacted their health and wellness while they were doing this. The participants received $10 gift cards per session they attended. They received a lunch each session. And in the beginning, they were given disposable cameras, which they could go out and take things, pictures of anything that was involved in that theme. Then they were actually given a digital camera with two memory cards to also take pictures. And then the prints of those photos were developed with Oakland University. And now I will turn it over to Rebecca to go through the data analysis and the research study.
Thanks, Tia. Mm-hmm. And so all the discussions that we had about the photos with our participants were audio recorded and transcribed. And so for our data analysis, my research team, which included myself and my two graduate assistants, we read through all of the transcripts, and then we developed a code book based upon those transcripts. We then coded all of the transcripts with the code book, and then we actually did a participatory data analysis component as well. So we had five sessions where we invited participants from the study. We had about 5 to 7 who participated in that, and they actually went over the code book with us, went over some of our coding decisions, and we actually reviewed some of the passages related to codes. So we got a little bit more insight and a little bit more understanding of the data, and also revised our code book according to that. So we're still, honestly, in the middle of the analysis. We still have some axial coding to do, and we want to make some adjustments based upon the feedback from the people who participated in that analysis. So I'm going to present some preliminary results today, just to give you the context of the policy part. And so I'm dividing the results into two categories. So the first being neighborhood factors, and then I'm going to go through some personal factors. And so I'm going to go into detail on each one of these. So this first slide is demonstrating this idea of abandoned buildings. And I'm sure many of you have seen news about Detroit, and the news loves to show how Detroit has a lot of abandoned buildings. And that did come out in our study. Predominantly this one building, which is a very large complex, which sits right adjacent to the Bell Building. And this complex was a former Sanders Chocolate Complex manufacturing building. And it's now really just rubble, and it's next to the Bell Building. So the photo on the left shows some of the rubble inside. I know it's a little bit dark. You can't see it very well. The photo on the right actually shows the Bell Building in the distance, but taken through the rubble. I also just want to make a side comment, and that's, of course, the confidentiality of my participants was very important to me. However, I also wanted to give the participants the option to be able to have credit for their photos. I thought that was really important. They were the photographers. So I asked each of the photographers, how they would want their work credited. And so you will see some of their names up here because that's, I think, an important part of this project. And so these are two photos of this complex next door. Now, abandoned buildings were, particularly this abandoned building, were they thought impacted their health for a number of reasons. The first being safety. So they often had to walk by this area. They had to walk at night. And so there were concerns about what might be in there, whether there are rats in there, whether there are people in there. If there were people in there, what were they doing in there? And also walking by just the debris, so concerns about particulate matter and things like that. That also frequently burns, so there's concerns about that. And so we have this quote here, if I'm walking to the store, driving to the store, this is something I have to face every day. I can walk out of my building, out of a beautiful building, and walk into a bunch of bullcrap. You know what I'm saying? I can be happy-go-lucky and cheerful when I'm inside, but when I walk out, I'm like, damn, I got to look at this. So there's also the emotional component of living next to a spot like this. This next slide gets to this issue of displacement. And so this photograph represents a housing project that was closed down. This was a housing project in which one of our participants grew up. And she had a lot of fond memories of this. Some of our Motown stars grew up in the same neighborhood. And it was, since after this photo was taken, it was actually demolished. And so there's this idea that, you know, there were formerly residents of this housing project that were displaced from this housing project for them to tear it down. But then there's also ideas of displacement that had to do with gentrification described in the data. So, you know, ideas that people felt they could no longer go back to neighborhoods that were part of, you know, part of their life, their old neighborhood, because they just weren't welcome there anymore. And so this participant says, it's no people of color in the neighborhood where it used to be, just driving them up and down the town, and the places where they got to rent, they can't afford it, you know? It's just pricing them out. And then, you know, I mean, that's a real concern to me. This next slide talks about graffiti, and the conversations about graffiti were very interesting because we had a lot of discussions about whether graffiti was art, and there seemed to be a mixed opinion on that. In some situations, it felt that graffiti made buildings look prettier or actually made buildings be restored or at least not demolished, but there were also ideas that people came from the suburbs, they came down, and they did graffiti because they wouldn't do it in their own neighborhoods, but they thought it was okay to come and do it in Detroit. And this idea of graffiti was also tied to job loss, which is, I think, the next slide. But often this graffiti was on buildings that formerly housed some sort of business that provided jobs. We asked our participants to give each photo a caption, and the Will named this photo, "People Have Too Much Time on Their Hands." So there's also this idea that when people don't have jobs, these are the kinds of things that they may do. And so here's a quote. I see... it used to be a business there in that building, and unfortunately the business ain't up and running no more. But that led people to people coming to the area and started that graffiti and the tagging and stuff. Sometimes they do it on buildings that people still work at, too. So this slide is talking a little bit more about job loss. Again, I'm sorry you can't see it as well. The photo on the left is a parking lot from the former Hostess factory, which is across the street from the Bell Building. And that photo, just a year before that photo was taken, the factory closed down, and that's the parking lot. And you can see that even in just a year, that parking lot's been overcome with brush. And so there's this idea that when jobs are lost, when businesses close, the neighborhood really deteriorates after that. The photo on the right, that's the guard station from that Sanders Chocolate building, tipped on its side, and there was this idea that, you know, that used to be someone's job. There used to be somebody who sat in that guard building, and now they no longer have a job. So this quote kind of gets at the idea that, you know, there really aren't jobs for people who live in Detroit. So, I mean, but you work here. But the people in the city that stays here, I mean, you look at, they tried to talk about opening up rec centers and stuff like that. The hell with rec centers. Give some guys some jobs, man. I mean, you put it out there, we won't work, and that's a lie. I mean, how can you work when you don't have opportunities to work? So the last sort of neighborhood or environmental level factor that came up in the data that I want to talk about today was this observation that there were decreasing services and resources available to the tenants at Bell. And so this quote talks specifically about case managers. The case managers they had were really, really good. They knew what they were doing. They were informative. They could help you out. They need some more people like that. So the idea that there had been some services, but now those services just weren't really available to the tenants at Bell. So I'm going to switch and talk a little bit about personal factors. So this first one was this idea of a battlefield. And again, this is another photo from the Sanders Chocolate Factory. So there was this sort of physical representation of the battlefield, which was this, you know, torn down, abandoned complex next door. But there was also the idea of this sort of internal battlefield. And that battlefield was the struggles that people at Bell kind of faced. And so this participant talking about this photo said, that's how I feel like my life is. It's a battlefield because I'm struggling with so much mentally. You know what I'm saying? I'm fighting with myself a lot. I'm arguing with others. And when I walk outside, I look at the battlefield. So despite having these struggles and participants having their battlefield, they did identify things that were stress relievers. And so this participant took this photo of this painting of a man listening to music because he reflected in that he uses music as a stress relief. Participants also mentioned cooking, eating, looking at a sunset or a pretty view as other things that they did to relieve stress. again, so we kind of talked about the neighborhood level issue of job loss, but this was also a personal level factor. So this idea that when people lost jobs, when they were no longer working, the impact they had on them. So I didn't really have a good photo that represented this, but I thought this quote was really meaningful. It feels sad because I'm used to working all the time. I'm not used to sitting around, ain't doing nothing. I'm used to being on the go every morning, being out on the job by 6 o'clock in the morning, get off at 8, but now I can't do that. So that affected me a whole lot. So this photo, or this slide, really talks about so this dichotomy of what someone may see on the outside and how they may feel on the inside. And this participant took these two photos of this building that had this mural painted on it, this mural of this space. But when you looked inside the door, you saw that inside the building it was filled with rubble and it had been burned out. And she related this to how she feels sometimes. And she also related this to how participants often felt when they were in substance use treatment. So this idea, that's how some people might think they are on the inside, tore up and messed up and nasty, horrible. Some people think about themselves on the inside, but on the outside, the picture on the left, you'd be like, that's how a person might be, smiling and happy, but on the inside, it's going to be how a person actually feels. Really prevalent in the data was this idea that participants couldn't do anything. And I think this is a particularly important idea for the topic of this this session. And so there are a few quotes here. You know, if you only a small peon like myself, you can't do nothing. Whatever you say is going to go over their head, and it's just like water rolling off a duck's back. Don't matter what we do, we can try to do the more positive that we try to do, the quicker you're going to get gunned down. Not gunned down literally, but ain't nothing going to happen. So at the end of, after doing the sort of the photo voice methodology, that culminated in two exhibits, and we didn't get a chance to talk about that. But those two exhibits, one took place at the Bell Building, and one took place at Oakland University. And all the participants were invited to attend and participate in those exhibits. They could talk to people who came to the exhibits about their photos. Following that, we did a last focus group and just asked them about their experience of being in the research study. So interestingly, that idea of can't do nothing seemed to have really changed by the time we got to the focus group. And when we got to the focus group, we had, for example, this quote. It being the research study, affected me in a good way because I got to know about the people in this group, and I believe a lot of us learned a lot about each other, and I noticed that our opinion counts, and it showed through our pictures, our opinions. It showed through each different picture. And so I know the purpose of the session is really thinking about how to turn CBPR into action. And so we really wanted to focus on having policy solutions come out of this research, come out of this data. And so we did face some challenges with this. And the first challenge was about the showed questions, those specific questions that Tia described earlier in the presentation. They fell kind of flat with our participants. Our participants just didn't respond to them. So instead, we just had more open discussion. But that discussion did not necessarily lead to that part of what can I do about it. The feelings that they had during the training that they couldn't do anything, I think that had an impact on being able to move to thinking about policy changes to address these factors that they were identifying. However, in conversations with attendants and also with NSO staff, we did identify a couple of policies, policy areas that we might think about. One is how to get that Sanders building dealt with. You know, it kind of overlaps two cities, dealing with that and getting that city that taken care of and addressed, and also advocating for increased funding for mental health services. Now, the plan for this project was to offered a policy advocacy training that ran parallel to the Photo Voice project. And so we based this training upon the policy advocacy curriculum developed by the Detroit URC, which had been previously used in Detroit neighborhoods. Unfortunately, that training, it was a five-session training that went during the Photo Voice project, we had very little participation in that training. And by the end, by the third training, people just stopped coming. So we decided we canceled that. However, now I think that there's a new renewed sense of empowerment among our participants. And so in the data analysis section, there was a request to bring that training back. So we're now looking into working on revising it with some of our participants, having them help us revise it to make it more appropriate for this population. So some of the lessons learned, the exhibits, I think, were really important for empowerment. And so while there was this idea that I can't do nothing during the Photo Voice project, by the end, particularly after the exhibits, participants really did express empowerment. But it takes time. But I do believe that this may be a prerequisite for being able to effectively engage in policy advocacy training or action. So this last continued challenge is a little misleading. That's on the lessons learned slide because I don't have the answer to this question, but I think it's really important. So how do people who have been systematically denied a voice move to a place of empowerment and action? And I think that's what we're going to be working on and really focusing on in the next phase of this project. So some of the next steps, we have a gallery in Detroit that's going to be exhibiting the Photo Voice Project, Photo Voice photos, and we actually are launching that with an opening event on Thursday night. So if you're in Detroit, feel free to drop by. We're going to continue to do the analysis and do some further member checking with participants and staff at NSO and Bell, and we'll present the results to them. We're going to engage participants in planning and revising the policy advocacy training and then offer that revised version, hopefully in a format that will be more appropriate for this population. And then there's talk about doing another photo voice project because every time I show up to Bell, about two or three tenants ask me when I'm coming back to do another one. It's something that people really enjoyed, people got a lot out of. And there's a lot of interest. We're working to establish a steering committee to further CVPR partnership and think about other directions we might go. And these directions are likely to be based upon the results of this study and some of these policy issues that we've identified. And we have some other activities planned between the university and the Bell Building, including Bell Building has a soccer team who in the spring is going to be practicing with the university soccer team at least once or twice, so we're excited about that. And just, you know, Tia wanted me to highlight one particular participant's case to just show the empowerment and the change that was seen in participants. And so one participant, when she first moved into Bell, she didn't come out of her room for 6 months, and they had to send people up to check on her to make sure that she was still alive even. And after participating in the program, she's now one of our most active participants. She's leader of the tenant council, and she's actually going to be on Fox 2 News Thursday morning promoting the photo exhibit that's on Thursday night. So we're quite proud of her, and I think she's a great example of the empowerment that took place in this project. So thank you very much.
Okay, why don't you take one question?
No questions?
Or you can talk to us later.
Hi, I'm Whitney. I work at University of North Texas Health Science Center. I'm actually on a Medicaid waiver project that's developing a health coaching intervention to individuals who are chronically homeless in Nellis County First Program. And so my question was, what was the actual content of the policy advocacy training, and what parts of it do you think do work with the population?
So the policy advocacy training, we started off with just what's policy, and then we moved to talking a little bit about how you come up with a policy campaign, working on what different strategies you might use. But frankly, I don't think it was the content that didn't work. I think it was the format. I mean, we had activities. It was interactive, but it was kind of paper-based. It's a low-literacy population, and they said we were bored. So I think it was the format and the structure. And it has worked very well with other populations, other communities in Detroit. But I think for these folks, that wasn't the right format. So I don't know what it will look like. Maybe next year I'll have another presentation here.
But I also think the mistake that we also made was we tried to put the staff and the tenants in one group. And so the level of learning was so far apart that we couldn't keep each person and everyone engaged and interested in what we were doing. So I think that was the bigger part of why we fell apart.
So we're thinking about just doing it with the tenants, really focusing there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.